Good morning. This is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, April the 21st. And I'll start, that's April the 21st, 2017. I'll start with an article with the headline, Cannon Place Completion. Official start work on phase two of another building. Dateline Danville. Thursday was a celebratory day for Mercy Housing Lakefront and others involved with the newly completed Cannon Place, located at the Danville Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. The 65 units of permanent supportive housing for homeless and at-risk veterans are full and have 101 veterans and their family members living there. It takes a village to build a village. It was a labor of passion, Mercy Housing Lakefront President Mark Angelini said at Cannon Place's ribbon-cutting ceremony Thursday. Angelini said these safe, affordable housing units will be available to veterans as long as they need them. We want to do more here, he also said. Mercy also started the process to build another 65-unit building. Cannon Place was a $17.5 million project, but this second building will be less expensive, Angelini said. The land is already in place, and so are utilities, as infrastructure was planned for two buildings. The sewer lines and other utilities were sized for two, Angelini said about the multiple buildings. When groundbreaking occurred on Cannon Place in 2015, Angelini said there was the possibility for three buildings. On Thursday, Angelini said the additional land space might be used for garden and farming possibilities. The site was once a golf course on the VA campus. Several people spoke at Cannon Place's ribbon-cutting ceremony, including two veterans who are residents of the new building. Michael Gibson said he was in Bloomington Normal between Peoria and Danville for Veterans Health Care Services. When he called his sister for help in coming to Danville. I'm grateful for Cannon Place, Gibson said, about having a place where he can be close to veteran health care services and he can get back on his feet. He said without his fellow veterans, he would not have made the progress he has as successfully as he has. Another veteran and Cannon Place resident who spoke was Sina Legg, a mother of four. Legg said she was homeless last year. And since she's been at Cannon Place, I'm in a much better place. She said the other residents and staff are like her family. I love it here. This building has been a true inspiration, Legg said. She said it takes courage to seek help. Others on hand for the ceremony included State Representative Thomas Bennett with the 106th District, Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower, John Lavery with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, VA Ileana Healthcare System Director Stephanie Young, and other local and state officials. This is about real people and families, Bennett said. This is a fantastic facility. It's super. Eisenhower said, Cannon Place gives a home to our nation's heroes. With children living in Cannon Place, Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs Assistant Director Harry Sawyer said the Tiny Boots Child Care Program can expand to this facility so children are not left alone when their veteran parents are going to job interviews or medical appointments. Deb Burkhardt, National Vice President for Supportive Housing with the National Equity Fund, said Cannon Place is the culmination of 6 years of work, and it's more than a roof over people's heads with all that it offers in support services, such as in learning new skills, jobs training, and receiving counseling. Angelini said the veterans are the inspiration why this building happened. Cannon Place consists of fully furnished 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments, resident lounges, library facilities, a fitness center, computer center, and community event room. Mercy Hospital Lakefront was selected as the developer for the project. Horve, H-O-R-V-E, Construction of Forsyth, built the facility. Angelini said this is a unique project that offers housing, health care, and education, and job training assistance under one roof. The Danville Housing Authority, VA, and Mercy Housing Lakefront secured $245,850 in funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for the 65 project-based Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Vouchers for the project. The Supportive Housing Assistant combines residence assistance from HUD with case management and clinical services provided by the VA. Veterans participating in the HUD VASH program rent privately owned housing and generally contribute no more than 30% of their income toward rent, according to HUD. There is no limit on the amount of time a veteran could remain in an apartment at the facility. And the next article has the headline, Man Hurt in Drive-By Shooting. Dateline Danville. City police are investigating two apparently separate drive-by shootings Wednesday evening, one of which hospitalized a Danville man, according to a Thursday morning press release from Criminal Investigations Commander Josh Webb. Danville police responded about 6:25 p.m. Wednesday to a shots fired report in the 1100 block of Harmon Avenue. Upon arrival, officers were told by witnesses the gunfire came from a black or silver-colored vehicle as it drove through the 1100 block of Harmon Avenue, Webb said in the release. During the shooting, a 20-year-old Danville man suffered a non-life-threatening wound to his shoulder and was taken to Presence United Samaritans Medical Center for treatment. No arrests have been made at this time, and the investigation continues, Webb added. Danville police then responded to another report of shots fired only 20 minutes later. As they arrived in the area of Main and State Streets, witnesses told police shots were fired from a blue-colored vehicle at the corner of the intersection, Webb said. He also said no injuries or property damage was reported and no arrests have been made as of Thursday morning. There is no indication that these incidents are related, Webb added. The investigation into these incidents continues, and no other information is being released at this time. Anyone whose information regarding these crimes is asked to call Danville Police at 431-2250. You can also reach Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 446-TIPS or by sending an anonymous email at vermilioncounty.crimestoppersweb.com. Crime Stoppers pays rewards of $1,000 for information on felony crimes or fugitives in the Vermilion County area. And the next article has the headline, Financial Literacy Begins Early. Dateline Danville. Financial literacy starts early, speaker said Thursday during the Money Smart Week Vermilion County kickoff. If we can get them started on the right foot, they won't have as many financial problems as adults, said Hope Garrett, co-chair of the local Money Smart Week and CEO of the Education Personnel Federal Credit Union. Six young people who are getting an early start with financial literacy were honored during the breakfast. Students in local schools wrote an essay about the connection between physical and financial health. First prize winners received $750, second place $500, and first $250. In grades 5 to 8 division, the winners, all sixth graders at Southview Elementary School, were Ellis Mansfield first, Ansley Sovine second, and Tyler Bryant third. In the grades 9 to 12 division, the winners were first, Haven D. Elliott, senior at Oakwood High School, second, Lauren Tingley, senior at Bismarck Henning High School, and third, Rachel Winslow, a junior at Georgetown Ridge Farm High School. The students read their essays and were presented with checks. Garrett also noted that Money Smart Week, which begins Saturday, is a national public awareness campaign that matches people who have information with those who need it. While the campaign is once a year, financial education happens every day, Garrett said, and daily interaction between children and parents is important. Money Smart Week began 14 years ago and locally in 2010. It's coordinated by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago to help individuals and families better manage their personal finances. Also speaking at the breakfast was Amy Bickers, Manager of Public Affairs and Outreach Programs with the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. She gave an overview of the Federal Reserve and also told the audience that financial fitness is a habit that needs to happen all year, not just once a year. Keynote speaker was Stephen Nacko, president of Danville Area Community College, who addressed the burden of student debt. High school students can make smart choices now, such as enrolling in the dual credit program at DACC, which saves money, and becoming a well-rounded student who has a better chance at a scholarship. For example, extra activities such as sports, art, and community work may give a student an edge. Financial aid is also available at DACC, said, and the college has received $50 million in donations from generous community members. Once a student enters college, there are ways to relieve the burden, such as work study and scholarships. Sometimes master's degree students can become teaching assistants, which results in free tuition and a stipend. The number one obstacle is gigantic debt, NACO said. You don't want to amass debt as an undergrad. DACC has other programs to help students obtain their bachelor's degrees without going into too much debt. Besides Garrett, the other co-chair of Money Smart Week is Kathy Swedler, consumer economics educator with the University of Illinois Extension. And the next article has the headline, BBBS, that's all in caps, plans 50s style sock hop. Dateline Danville. Families will travel back to a time of poodle skirts and saddle shoes at a 50s-style sock hop planned by Big Brothers Big Sisters of Vermilion County. This magic moment, is set for 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, May 5th at the Harrison Clark Clubhouse, 1300 West Bury Street. Tickets are $20 per adult-child pair and $5 for each additional child. A limited number of tickets will be sold for the event. There's only so many people we can fit in there, Big Brothers Big Sisters program manager Susan Bors said of the venue. Cheryl McIntyre, executive director of Vermilion County Big Brothers Big Sisters, said the idea for the event evolved from a desire to create a more inclusive dance. This is a dance for anyone, she said. You'll always hear about dad and daughter dances and mother and son dances, but not everyone fits that mold. A mentor might be the most important person in that child's life. Anyone can come, McIntyre added. We're catering to families, and we're trying to make it affordable. A disc jockey will spin 1950s tunes at the sock hop, but McIntyre said the evening will be filled with many other fun activities in addition to the dance. We want to encourage people to dress up, and we're working on getting some classic cars there, she said. We're going to set up a soda fountain with popcorn, cotton candy, and cupcakes. National Honor Society members from Danville High School will run the soda fountain and concessions. Librarian Joel Shoemaker from the Oakwood Public Library will perform a magic show. A photographer will be on hand to take photos, and a balloon artist will create balloon animals. The proceeds from the event will be sold to support Big Brothers Big Sisters summer programming. The organization offers two summer programs, Young Women Aware, that serves 25 girls from Southview Upper Elementary, North Ridge Middle, and Danville High Schools, and the Yes I Can program that serves 25 Georgetown area girls. The summer programs provide area girls with fun educational activities. Some of the activities in the past have included college visits to Indiana State University, money management tips, making purses from t-shirts, as well as going to the farmer's market and the pool. Our Danville girls receive Danville Mass Transit bus tokens because we don't want transportation to be an issue. Typically, both summer programs run for 4 weeks, but we'd like to do it for 8 weeks, McIntyre said. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Terry L. Fitzgerald Nelson, 58, of Danville, who died on April 16th at Carroll Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Terry's life will be held at 5 p.m. on Sunday, April 23rd at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be 2 to 5 p.m. prior to the service. She will be laid to rest at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Memorials can be made in her name to the American Cancer Society. And the next is for Larry Dwayne Poole Sr., 80, of Vetersburg, who died on Wednesday, April 19th at Parkview Healthcare in Attica, Indiana. His funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 22nd, at Dickerson Funeral Home in Vetersburg, with Pastor Greg McDonald officiating. Visitation will begin at 12 p.m. Saturday and continue until the time of service at 2 p.m. Burial will follow service at Waynetown Masonic Cemetery with military honors provided by American Legion Post number 288. And the next is for Daryl L. Redman, 78, of Danville, who died on April 17th at his home in rural Danville. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, April 25th, in Sunset Memorial Park, 3901 North Vermillion Street, Danville. James Blue will officiate. Interment will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Monday, April 24th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermillion Street in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the National Kidney Foundation, 30 East 33rd Street, New York, New York, 10016, or the American Lung Association's National Office at 55 West Wacker Drive, Suite 1150, Chicago, Illinois, 60601. And the next is for Roy D. Ranceville, who died on Thursday, April 13th. Homegoing celebration will commence at 12 p.m. on Saturday, April 22nd, at the New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until time of service. Officiating will be Pastor Ken L. McCray. Interment will be at Spring Hill Cemetery. And now, an article with the headline, Hoopston Play Revolves Around German POWs. Dateline Hoopston. Factual accounts from Hoopston's rich history blend with fictionalized stories in the dramatization Bavarian Hearts on 2nd Avenue. The performance will be presented at 6 and 7:15 p.m. Tuesday, April 25th at the Hoopston Public Library, 110 North 4th Street. A performance also will be given at 2 p.m. Sunday, April 30th at Autumn Fields Adult Community. Admission is free, but people need to get advance tickets at the main desk on a first-come basis. As of Wednesday afternoon, all tickets for the first show had been claimed, and the 58 tickets for the second show were going quickly. The performance is not recommended for young children. Author and director Thomas Sweeney, who is in charge of archives at the library, based the play on the experience of Hoopston citizens and those in the German war camp in 1944 in Hoopston. By July 1944, more than 2,500 prisoners were helping Hoopston factories and farmers because of a shortage of labor. The prisoners would march twice daily on 2nd Avenue. These German prisoners of war come off as neither good or bad, Sweeney said. It is a human story with several surprises. This is certainly among the top five stories in Hoopston's rich heritage. The play has a narrator, a Red Cross nurse, and features seven stories. In the epilogue, it's 1960, and the nurse has returned to Hoopston, where she hears what became of the three men who escaped from the POW camp. The escape prompted a 10-day FBI search and got national attention. One of the fictionalized stories in the play revolves around Jordan, a wealthy woman who had five husbands in her past and who became smitten with an escaped prisoner, Marilyn Tyler, a library volunteer who portrays Jordan, said, "It's kind of fun." The prisoner crawls through her bedroom window, and the woman goes from being frightened to thinking he's kind of cute. Of course, there were laws then about consorting with the enemy. Tyler has acted in another dramatization, The Mayor's Wife, written by Sweeney. "He does a beautiful job. He's very creative," she said of Sweeney. Sweeney has presented other dramatization in Hoopston over the years, including Who's Who in the Cornfield, about famous people in the county, and Murder on Thompson Avenue, about the worst crime in the county, the 1919 unsolved murder of the mean-spirited Sabina Cummings. Nine people had reason to commit the murder, he said. Often the audience is involved in determining the outcome of the final scenes in the dramatizations. People love the dramatization of local history, as if it is happening right there, he said. For the German POW play, Sweeney used several resources, including the Chronicle, oral histories taped by former veterans, Heritage Magazine, and references to a Walter Winchell newscast in 1944. The play has several settings, including an apartment house on 2nd Avenue, Illinois Canning Factory, fields north of town, a wild Illinois tavern, Camp Barracks, the Craig Hotel, St. Anthony's Church, an asparagus steam room, and public stockade. The stories have humor, conflict, such as should you give sanctuary to the enemy, and romance. Vintage photos, nostalgic music, well-paced narratives, and radio broadcasts unify the episodes. Sweeney has a theater background, having been part of a repertory company at the University of Michigan and having taught in a Chicago suburb. Those appearing in the play include Janelle Sechrest, Margaret Cope, Denise Reed, Danny Lugo, Scott Hudson, Mike Pemberton, Al Zawaris, Sarah Miller, Marilyn Tyler, Christy Hudson, Mary Tyler, Yolanda Pemberton, and Nancy Joey Mason. Vintage photographs were designed by Rosalie Hickman. And now this is a, at the top it says it's a news memory. And it's the column called Midwest Voices with the title, The Nuns Are Right, Where's the Antibiotic-Free Beef? We're with the nuns on this one. A group of nuns in Texas is pushing McDonald's to create a comprehensive plan and timetable to use only antibiotic-free pork and beef. The nuns who own stock in the company plan to bring their campaign to McDonald's annual corporate meeting in Oak Brook in May. Here's hoping McDonald's takes heed. Our nation's health depends on it. Farmers commonly feed antibiotics to pigs and cows to make them grow faster. Industrial-scale operations also use antibiotics to keep animals healthy in crowded, unsanitary environments. But the more we use antibiotics in farm animals, the more quickly bacteria grow resistant to the drugs we need to cure human diseases. Scientists worry about the day when their medicine chest is empty and such illnesses as pneumonia become untreatable. Fatal childhood diseases again would be rampant as they were a century ago. Ordinary cuts and scrapes, when infected, again, would kill. Common surgeries, such as joint replacements and organ transplants, where there's a high risk of infection, would become too risky to attempt. Superbugs, bacteria resistant to a variety of drugs, already are here. Last year, a Nevada woman died from a close relative of E. coli that was resistant to 26 different antibiotics. Each year, 23,000 Americans died from bacterial infections resistant to more than one drug. A British study predicted superbugs will kill 10 million people a year by 2050. The hamburgers and sausages at McDonald's represent a fraction of the market for antibiotic-laden meat, but the hamburger chain is an industry leader. It paves the way. When McDonald's announced in 2015 it would follow some smaller chains, by insisting on substantially antibiotic-free chicken from its suppliers, its big competitors followed suit. KFC, the last major holdout, enlisted in the effort on April 7th. When McDonald's decided its eggs would be laid by cage-free chickens within 10 years, more than 100 other companies decided they would do that as well. A decision by McDonald's, the world's largest hamburger chain, to get antibiotics out of beef and pork almost certainly would force a similar chain reaction. It's not a change that can happen overnight. Presumably, farmers would continue to use antibiotics to treat sick animals, as the nuns, the Congregation of Benedict Sisters of BOENE, Boene, Texas, understand and accept. But the Food and Drug Administration says more than 70% of the type of antibiotics used to treat humans in the United States are sold for use in livestock. That creates a breeding ground for bacteria to develop resistance to important drugs. Bacterial resistance has been on the rise for years, but scientists have been able to blunt its effects by developing new types of antibiotics after old ones lose their effectiveness. Yet, while bacteria are losing some battles, they are winning the war. The rate at which new antibiotics are discovered has been declining for 50 years, and scientists have found no new class of effective antibiotics for 20 years. Even if they do find a new one, the current overuse of antibiotics will eventually overcome it as well. Moreover, funding for research against disease is on the chopping block in President Donald Trump's Trump's budget blueprint would slash $6 billion from the National Institute of Health, nearly a fifth of the agency's funding. We don't doubt McDonald's understands the importance of the issue. It was among only 9 fast food chains giving a passing grade last year by the Friends of the Earth and other environmental groups for trying to reduce the use of antibiotics in food. And McDonald's is pushing hard to improve its image among increasingly health-conscious consumers. But nothing gets results faster than unrelenting pressure for change. Using antibiotics to produce growth in livestock has been banned in Scandinavian countries since 2006. The Benedictine Sisters of Berna get it. There is a moral imperative, quite suitable for a religious order to champion, to pushing for an end to the dangerous, non-therapeutic use of antibiotics in livestock. In coming years, countless lives could be saved. And now, where the hell is it? And now some sports news. Walk-off win for Vikings Hicks. Dateline Danville. The only thing that Danville senior Devontae Hicks didn't do on Thursday night at Danville Stadium was sell popcorn at the concession stand. Hicks scored the game-winning run from second base on a dropped third strike after pitching 4 scoreless innings of relief as the Vikings defeated the Champaign Central Maroons 1-0 in 10 innings. I really wanted this win against them, Hicks said. This is my last game against Central, and it's the first time that we've beaten them since I've been in high school. And it snaps a 5-year losing skid against the Maroons. Danville's last win against Champaign Central came in the 2012 season. We haven't beat them since Coach Des, that's Jeff Desmond, has been the coach at Danville, Hicks said. It's a special moment to be able to get the win for him. But Hicks is known for being a quick, slick fielding shortstop who has signed to play next year at Danville Area Community College. When did he develop into a pitcher? I pitch a little, he said. I usually come in close games if they need me. Today he put me into the game in the 7th, and there was nothing that was going to keep me from getting this win. I knew I had to shut them down just like Noah Nelson did in the first 6 innings. Hicks, who has thrown 8 innings this spring, went 4 scoreless innings. The right-hander didn't even allow a hit during his performance, which included Daniel Sr. left-hander Noah Nelson, which included Danville Sr. left-hander Noah Nelson. Oh, I'm sorry. I started reading the caption under a picture. 6 strikeouts and just 1 walk. It was by far the best I've thrown this year, Hicks said. It's probably the best I've thrown in all my life. I'm sorry I can't finish that article, but I look forward to reading to you again next week. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Danville area news for Friday, April 21st. I look forward to reading with you again soon.